What's up, everybody? This week I'm joined by Sarah as we sit down to talk about an album that was both a rebirth and a renewal of form for an established band. We're talking about Californication by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. That and a whole lot more is to come on this week's episode of the 90s Podcast. Welcome to the show. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the 90s Podcast right here on the Because We Network. Hope you're doing well today, and I'm joined by Sarah. Sarah, how are you?
Hey, I am good. How are you?
I am perma-tired.
That's a given, though.
It's the curse of being in your 40s. You're perma-tired, you do nothing but work. I did a live gig last night where my back completely and utterly spasmed out halfway through the show. So that was fun.
Yeah?
So, how are you doing?
I am fabulous. Compared to the last time we tried to record this episode.
Yeah, the last time we tried to... this is our second attempt recording this episode because the first attempt was probably the worst content we could have put out there.
Well,
in
no.
In terms of quality.
right.
Not in terms of, you know, what we could have said.
Right. No, you know? I was a tired bunny. I'm always a tired bunny these days, but I was a super tired bunny.
And my ADHD kicked in and I couldn't control the conversation.
It was very squirrel. Yeah. But so, we're here again. And what are we here to talk about, dear?
We're here to talk about a classic hip hop, rock, funk, blended. I don't know what I'm talking about. My ADD's acting up again. But no, we are here to talk about the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
We're here to talk about the Red Hot Chili Peppers 1999 album Californication, which was released on June 8th of 1999.
Yes.
It was so awesome. It went to number 3 in the Billboard charts and number 5 on the UK charts.
Now, I'm surprised by that number in the UK chart because...
do you think it'd be better or worse?
I thought it'd be a lot better. And I mean, for those who don't know the UK album chart number, under 3... I'm shocked at because of the amount of albums that are sold were sold weekly in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So with this selling 12 million copies worldwide.
Right. A little under 12 million worldwide.
A little under 12 million. Yeah. Roundabout. You know, it to get to number 5, I thought it was at least the number 1 album.
Right.
But then again, at that time, 1999 in the UK, the top 2 albums that were fighting week in, week out, and I'm not making this up, were Play by Moby and the Santana album. The one where he did all his collaborations.
Yeah.
So they were like switching back and forth every week and everything else. And plus you had Travis there as well.
Y'all had a bit going on.
Had a bit going
on
in 99.
Yes.
Especially in the summer of 99.
Right.
But go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so this was produced by Rick Rubin of Beastie Boy fame, who also went on to produce the last Johnny Cash albums as well.
Now, did you know what else Rick Rubin has in his resume?
What's that?
Rick Rubin is a huge professional wrestling fan.
Really?
And back in 1990, he met a loudmouth, loud coat wearing Jim Cornette.
Oh, Lord help.
They got together and they started a wrestling promotion called Smoky Mountain Wrestling.
I'm not shocked by this at all.
And for those wrestling fans who know what I'm talking about, Smoky Mountain Wrestling was the 4th biggest promotion in the U.S. and had some of the biggest stars start out there.
Randy Orton started there. Batista started there.
That was the next one that came on after that.
Okay.
We're talking Chris Jericho, Lance Storm, Kane.
Okay.
And New Jack.
Okay. All right. Well, but this particular album was released for the Chili Peppers, not Jim Cornette's wrestling outfit. It was released on Warner Brothers Records and is technically a funk rock and alternative rock album.
Yes. I don't know where I got hip hop from. I'm probably because Flea.
Yeah. Flea. It's the baseline. Yeah. So.
It's Flea.
So we need to ask, how did we get here, dear?
How did we get to 1999 with the Red Hot Chili Peppers? And to do that, we have to go all the way back to 1991.
Okay.
So there's an 8-year narrative with how the Chili Peppers, because the Chili Peppers only released 3 albums
in the 90s.
In the 90s.
Right. So the first one in 91 was Blood Sugar Sex Magik, right?
Yeah. And that was their 5th album. And...
It was success,
critical,
right?
Yeah. Critical commercial success.
Yeah. That's Under the Bridge is on that
Under
one, right?
Under the Bridge, Give It Away.
Give it a wee. Your accent popped up on that one.
And the Give it a wee. And I said that on purpose. And this album had the what people consider the classic Chili Peppers lineup.
Okay.
You had Andy Kiedis.
Uh-huh.
John Frusciante.
Yeah.
Flea.
Yeah.
And Will Ferrell.
Right. Ah, yes. Chad, yes.
Chad Smith.
Yes.
So this album blew up. I mean, right. We're talking worldwide smash hits.
Right.
You know, basically everything that Californication would become.
Right.
But not everybody was ready for that. And as they were getting ready to record One Hot Minute, which would be the next album,
right,
John Frusciante upped and left the band, not comfortable with the fame and the environment.
Oh, yeah, because he was also facing a really big drug problem at the time, wasn't he?
Yeah, and with all due respect, if your drug problem is big enough to where you want it out of the Chili Peppers...
It was a bitsy. It was quite a one, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with all due respect to those guys, I mean, heroin was a big thing in the Chili Peppers circle.
Yeah.
And Frusciante would develop a crippling addiction, both heroin and cocaine, during this time, leaving him close to death and basically squandered what money he earned.
Blood Sugar Sex Magic, yeah.
He's living in squalor, basically.
So, One Hot Minute was a commercial and critical bust, but because that's the one that they replaced Frusciante with Dave Navarro with,
yes.
Right? Okay. And after all that, Navarro was like, deuces out. I'm going back to Jane's Addiction. Y'all have fun.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
It didn't work out.
Right.
It didn't work out.
Yeah, he went on to host tattoo TV shows and whatnot, yes.
Although they did get the Beavis and Butthead soundtrack song out of Dave Navarro.
Yes. So,
which I still haven't listened to all the way.
But. Oh my God, you need to. Okay, so at this point, you know, we had Blood Sugar Sex Magic. We had One Hot Minute. Navarro has gone. It's like, okay, Frusciante in the interim while all this was going on was entering rehab and getting his stuff squared up and whatnot and getting cleaned up.
Yeah, there was an intervention done.
Right.
And the Chili Peppers were part of that because they did become very, very close. I'm not sure if they worked together on and off before 91.
Right.
But they became good enough friends where they were part of the intervention.
Right.
So what happened is Frusciante went to rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was there going through the therapy and you know, the withdrawals and the...
All that funky all stuff, stuff, yes.
He came to terms with his fame.
Uh-huh.
And considers this time of his life not as a dark, depressing, as a lot of people do, dark, depressing,
right,
worst part of my life, but sort of like a rebirth of who he was and what he was. And during that time, Flea convinced the rest of the band, that Frusciante needed to come back. And then basically... stalked Frusciante into coming back, for lack of a better term.
I mean, you know, you do what you gotta do, but Flea and Frusciante, and we'll talk about this more as we go on, their playing together was just, they played off of each other. It was very symbiotic and very, so.
You couldn't tell where one began and one ended, and I'll get to an anecdotal story about that here as we go on.
So, you know, as they were getting ready to do Californication, they were thinking about incorporating electronica. And they had shopped their ideas around to several electronica producers, but they got shot down even by the thin white Duke himself.
Yes.
Bowie was like, no.
Blackstar was like, not having any of this.
So,
eventually, what they decided to do was go back to the alternative rock roots.
Well,
and
yeah. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Yeah, and they went even further back, though, to more of the stuff that they used to do in the 80s.
Well, yeah, because it was kind of broke with One Hot Minute, so they needed to go back to...
Yeah.
So they needed to go back to the Blood Sugar Sex Magic days.
And they kind of did.
Yeah.
They started recording demos in Flea's garage. Now, that, to me... Red Hot Chili Peppers made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I would picture this house as being a house in suburbia somewhere where there's kids on skateboards and bikes going around a cul-de-sac.
It's sort of like a Warren Buffett type situation, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the Snoop Dogg situation.
Right.
Because Snoop's house isn't that grand either.
Right.
Or wasn't when he did his reality TV show.
Right. No, he's still in the same house.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, yeah.
So, but they basically did about 30 songs, which is not a bad demo
No, not at all. And like half of them made them out of the album, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
But considering there are a couple on the album that are a bit dodgy,
they I wonder what the rest of are like. If those 15 were the best, it's probably good the other 15 stayed in the garage.
Yes. Now, in saying that, this is a great album, and we'll get to a couple of the dodgy songs here in a minute.
Right.
So.
But the band considered this the most fun they'd ever had. Anthony went on to quote, "Everyone was having fun. It was as if we had nothing to lose, nothing to gain. We didn't care. We were making music for the sake of making music." And it had been a while since that had happened for them.
Yeah, I mean, considering, like I said, this would have been their third album of a decade.
Right. So, and with this one, you know, they once again worked with Rick Rubin, although there was a little bit of hesitation initially. It was like...
From Rubin's side.
Yeah, because, I mean, again, their reputation had preceded them with their drug use and whatnot.
And they're partying and...
And when you're bad enough where even Rubin's like... So, but due to the professionalism shown in the studio... Rubin was definitely sold on it. The band ended up completing all of the recordings in just 5 days.
Which is phenomenal. And I mean, that's because they left the party in at the door, and when the studio lights turned on, they played music. They didn't argue, they didn't, they didn't...
Well, it's like Steven Tyler says, I thought the drugs was more time for the sex than rock and roll.
Yeah.
They just let the sex on after hours.
Yeah.
So it was like pure rock and roll.
Pure rock and roll. And yes. 5 days to complete a 15-track album.
Hey, hey, hey. That's like some Beatles-type stuff, like they used to do back in the day. I mean, they would do it in a day, but yeah.
Well, I think because they'd spent an intense and insane amount of time rehearsing these at Flea's Garage, all they had to do was one take, maybe two takes, throw an overdub here or there, and then on day four, get Andy Kiedis in the thing to lay his lyrics down.
Well, so tell me about what the layout, what the group lineup looked like.
Well, it's the classic Chili Peppers lineup. You got Andy Kiedis on vocals, John Frusciante on all kinds of guitars, play some keyboards too.
Mm-hmm.
He does some backing vocals as well. Flea is all over the bass style of everything. Again, does a few backing vocals here or there. And then you got Chad Smith on percussion and drums. And I never realized how good of a drummer he was until I saw that TikTok of him
doing... Yeah, he's got a whole little TikTok series where he does those. And he is phenomenal.
Was it 30 Seconds to Mars?
Yeah.
That one?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a phenomenal... He never heard it before, and he was playing it to a click. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the band, with the exception of the drums...
Mm-hmm.
And he came across, and even the band were like, wow, we wish we played it like that.
Right.
You know? So, and then you had Greg Kirsten on keyboards and Patrick Warren on Chamberlain organ.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing those were more of the acoustic songs towards the end, because, and Californication itself. So, let's go in track by track. Now, there are 15 tracks.
Okay.
All written by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Okay.
And Nikitas' words.
Right.
Another one of these words, the lead singer's words with the band's music.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Because we've done a lot of solo songwriters on this stuff. Like, you know, with Blur and with Oasis and stuff like that. And that's something I've noticed with American bands. It's a collaborative effort when it comes to the tune. But when it comes to the words, it's the singer that usually that does it.
Yeah.
Whereas in Britain, it's the poet that does it, and that could be anyone in the band.
Right.
In Europe, not just in Britain, but in Europe, there's a band that I found called the Motorhomes, and their poet was the drummer. And when he left, the second album was absolutely garbage.
Well, also, I think at least there's a thing where, in order for you to have, if it's going to be an emotional song, you're going to feel the emotion more. It's going to come across more through if you're the one who wrote it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, I get that.
Not necessarily all the time.
No, because I mean, you got Elton John, for example, who hasn't written a lyric in his life.
Right. But I mean, if you look at stuff like, you know, Fleetwood Mac or No Doubt, I mean, I'm thinking of all the bands where the females wrote all the excruciating stuff and sang them to the guitarist, and the guitarist had nothing to do, could do nothing but just sit there and take it, that type of stuff. But queens, absolute queens. Okay, anyway, back to
Chili Peppers.
Yes, so the first track was Around the World.
It's a very, very high intensity way to open the album.
Okay.
And it's kind of, it's known for the, for Flea's bass line, you know, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of it in there. And it's all about global culture. Right. So it's not about California.
I'm shocked.
It's about everywhere else but California.
I mean, it's all or nothing.
Yeah,
nothing,
right?
Guys, right?
But it's very, very high energy. It's very, very high tempo. It gives you a kick in the ass, mm-hmm. you know. Some of the lyrics have not aged well, like his pseudo-Asian mm-hmm. singing during mm-hmm. the last verse of chorus.
Yeah.
But I like this song. I really do. And it kind of gives me vibes of Give It Away,
mm-hmm.
but a lot more in depth.
We're going to take a very quick sidebar before we go into the next track. You're talking about it not being from California, and that's a shocker. Again, okay, you have to realize we both have ADD, so bear with us. And then my brain works in word association and 6 degrees and whatnot. So one thing will lead to another. So I know how I got to where I'm getting, but if you don't, hold tight. So we're talking about, you know, California, songs about California. I sometimes enjoy watching the React channel where it's like teens listen to whatnot. Right. And there was one where it was like teens and their parents, and there was this father and son, and they're both from California, and it was like teens react to songs, 90 songs that their parents listened to as teens or whatever. And it was a Red Hot Chili Pepper song that came on, and I don't remember which one it was. And the kid's like, I don't know who this is. And the dad's like, what do you mean? You're from California, son. Like, they're like unofficially the state's band. Like, how all they write about is California. Like, how do you not know? And that amuses me. So sorry.
California's band could also be Green Day.
Yeah, but all of Green Day's song is not about California. No, that's what I'm saying. It's just, yeah. Okay.
But no, around the world, going back to Around the World real quick, I forgot to mention, the video was directed by Stefan Sinduli.
Mm-hmm.
If I've butchered that last name, my sincerest apologies.
Mm-hmm.
And they've worked with the band on multiple occasions, on multiple videos, including multiple videos on this album. So they frequent collaborator. But no, it's a good way to kick off the album.
Some high energy. Let's do it.
And it's a Chili Pepper song, if that makes sense.
Yes. Because
it's a signature of the what's the word? Formula.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's very formulaic for them. Yeah. Yes. Well, next you have Parallel Universe, which is pretty much what it says on the tin. It talks about the different ideas of alternative realities and existential confusion. This is one of those that just started off as a jam session during a rehearsal, whatnot, back in Flea's garage. But this actually reached the top of the modern rock tracks chart in 2000. You might know it if you're not familiar with this album, but you played Rock Band in the early aughts, you know this song because it was all over it.
We have three versions of Rock Band.
We do.
Well, let's say Rock Band. We have three Rock Band type games.
Yeah.
Two Rock Band guitars. We had the drum set for a while.
Mm-hmm, the Beatle ones, yeah.
We got the Beatles. We've got Guitar Hero 5.
Yeah, we've got some. Yes. Yeah. But the music video for Parallel Universe features the band in a CGI universe consistent with the song's themes.
Now, I've never seen the video to this one because I think they released half of this album as singles around the world.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen the music video for this one. I really haven't.
Hmm.
So, interesting. We've moved to Scar Tissue, which is probably my favorite song on the album.
Yeah, this one and the next one are my two favorites, yeah.
Yeah, just the guitar of Frusciante's playing is, you know, real, real good. The vocals, the backing vocals, the middle bits in between the instrumental parts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's real, real good. It was written by Andy Kiedis as he reflected on his battle scars from various experiences, like his drug addiction, so on mm-hmm. and so forth. And it won a Grammy for Best Rock Song. And this is, you know, again, a Red Hot Chili Pepper song.
It's one of their signature songs. It's from one of their signature sounds. I mean, it's very much... this song could have fit on Blood Sugar Sex Magik. Like it, yeah. It like sound wise, it matched. But the song's minimalist guitar solo has been praised for its emotional impact. I mean, they didn't throw everything in the kitchen sink in there just to make it big and whatnot. It was not a Phil Spector-ish type song.
No.
So, and I like those. I like those raw.
And I think I think that's a theme of the music on this album. They didn't go over the top with it. Mm-hmm. Even on the hard songs, like Around the World, mm-hmm. you know, that's very, very... That's a hard song for them,
right?
But it was still very, very minimalistic in how they played. They didn't overlay. They stuck to a three person mm-hmm. band with a singer for most of this,
right? And the music video for this one was directed by the same director from Around the World, and it showed the band members driving through a desert. So it was very, you know, it fit.
It's a real, real good song, and it shows the symbiotic relationship between Flea and Frusciante perfectly. I can't say enough about this song. I know we're flying through it, but I just think that this is...
I love this song.
This is the best song on the album, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, to me, it's a close tie with the next song, Other Side. Other Side, this...
Sorry.
Other Side, you better start clicking your pen, homie, discusses themes of life, death, and the afterlife, and it was inspired by the band's original guitarist, Telel Slovak, and if I'm mispronouncing that again, I'm sorry, who had passed away of a heroin overdose. Once again, the lyrics are by Anthony, and they explore his own experiences with drug addiction. It reached number 14 on the Billboard Hot 100, which is, I mean, even though that's one of their most commercially successful songs, it deserved to go higher, I think. And the music video went on to win multiple awards. It is visually striking with black and white aesthetic, excuse me. And as you can imagine, with a lot of songs that are just dang good, it has been covered by several artists from multiple different genres.
Yeah, I like this song too. This is, you were right about it being a probably, when I say your favorite on the album, I don't mean, yeah, you're right about that.
Right.
But I can see why you would say that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the bass line, I love the bass line on it. And it kind of drives the song forward.
Right.
As opposed to the guitars driving the song forward. This is one of the few songs on the album where the symbiotic guitar playing is not as fluid.
Prevalent, yeah.
It's more the bass player and the guitarist.
Right.
You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think
they still complement each other, but they're not...
as intertwined as they are. That's the word I've been looking for. They're not as intertwined as they are with other songs, which isn't a deterrent for that. It actually makes it stand out.
Right.
You know, I love that you can hear me humming. You heard me humming it a minute ago, mm-hmm. you know, just. But I think it was deserving to be one of the better songs on the album. I still think Scar Tissue takes that for me.
Well. The next song.
Next song's Get On Top. Sorry. It's very, very punchy.
Yes.
And heavily slapped by Flea.
Yes.
It's a fan favorite during the live performances, and it's kind of early hip hop and funk mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, very, very aggressive and in your face. More so than Around the World.
Yeah.
And it's just punchy. And it literally is about, you know, being assertive.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's a happy, angry song. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, that's about, you know, that's actually very astute.
Because, I mean, it's one of those songs that people, you know, you see, okay, you've seen American Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's walking in the office mm-hmm. with the headphones on and the mm-hmm. Walkman. This could have been one of the songs coming out of the Walkman as he's walking through the office trying to get himself pumped up for the day.
Which is it also that it leads into the next song, which is a little bit of a different vibe, but it's one of the ones that it's the title track and one they're best known for.
Yeah.
Which is Californication.
Yeah. It's a hard one to talk about because this song annoyed me for the longest time for the first 6 months that I knew about it. I was learning to play the guitar back in 1999. Uh-huh. No, it was actually sooner than that. Anyway. So I was getting my, you know, my fingers were getting all limber and mm-hmm. I could do things then that I can't do now. And I thought, I'll learn how to play Californication. And this is an example of how symbiotic and intertwined.
Yeah, the Frusciante and Frusciante thing was, because you couldn't tell what was what.
So I'm trying to play this, and it was only when I realized one was a bass line and one was a guitar line that I was able to pull the thread out, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. and learn how to play it properly. Now, it's been...
a minute.
It's been about 25 years.
We won't discuss that.
Since this album came out. And it's been about 19 years since I last tried to play mm-hmm. Californication.
Mm-hmm.
Probably still do it, but I'd probably still try and do the twiddly bits uh-huh. at the same time, not realizing it. But no, this is evolved from a poem that Anthony Kiedis written about Hollywood and American culture and kind of the darker sides of fame and fortune. Mm-hmm. It is a very, very, not depressing song, but it's not a happy song either, is it?
No, not really. I mean, you know, the lyrics mention Kurt Cobain and other figures who had been negatively affected by the lure of California.
Yeah.
It went on to become an iconic song for the band, and the title of it was later used for a TV show starring David Duchovny of...
X-Files fame.
Exactly.
No, I never watched the X-Files. I've seen about 3 episodes of it. And
I can't with you.
I could never remember whether he was Mulder or Scully.
Oh, Jesus. Is it too late for an annulment? I mean, granted, fine. We have the kids. But
fine.
I mean...
walk out the...
So if you don't know...
walk out the door.
Just turn around now. But,
say you're not welcome anymore, but this is your house.
What I mean is that if I put, like, for reason, does not know who Fox Mulder is, do you think that
I get them confused. I knew it was Mulder or Scully.
What?
I think everybody does.
Pardon me with my Snape voice, obviously.
Obviously.
But anyway, the music video for Californication features the band members as characters in a video game, traversing various California landmarks.
Now, is the TV show Californication about his sex addiction, or was that the Red Shoe Diaries that
No, it was Californication.
Okay.
And that was the reason why I think they did divorce. That caused a bunch of issue with
his wife,
Taya Leone,
yes.
who is
from Bad Boys.
There you go.
And she's done a couple of other movies. I think the most famous one was Fun with Dick and Jane with Jim Carrey.
Yes. So, but yeah, David Duchovny was married to Taya Leone. Anyway, so then we go into Easily.
Yes. I disagree with this sentiment because falling out of love is not easy. Falling in love is desperately easy.
Well, it's for you, but it's different things for different people.
True, because it talks about the emotional ease of falling in and out of love. Mm-hmm. It's got an upbeat tempo. It really does. It kind of it has that parallel universe kind of vibe to it going on. It's got a cult following, never releases a single, but it's, you know, I'm trying to bring this one off the top of my head, and I can't because it's been a couple of days since I listened to the album to prepare for this. Maybe I should listen to it today to prepare for
it. No, you're good. You're good. But yeah, I mean, it's got its upbeat tempo and its optimistic tone. It gained a cult following, but it was not actually released as a single. It's got a really good rhythm to it, a really solid rhythm that was inspired by African beats. And it was one of the songs rehearsed in Flea's Garage during pre-production, but it was almost completely left off the final album. It almost did not make the cut.
I don't understand why, because from what...
There are other ones. I know, we'll get there.
There are other ones further down the line that could have been mm-hmm. left off this album.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is definitely not one of them. Definitely not one of them. We jump to the next track, which my research kind of let me down a little bit on this one, mm-hmm. so I apologize if I get this one completely and utterly wrong. And the reason I said that is because when I did the research for it, it pulled up a track by the same name by Moby, which was also released in 1999.
Same, yeah. So talking about Porcelain,
we're talking
right?
a song called Porcelain. Mm-hmm. Yes. So if anything that I say is incorrect, I basically what I did is I read the facts and I pulled the ones out that were the least likely sounding.
Right.
And I know that's not how facts work, but what I mean is,
you can't always trust what you see on the internet these
exactly.
days, guys. Yeah.
Abe Lincoln gave us that warning back in the 1850s.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, but what I do know about it is a melancholic song with, you know, which is talking about vulnerability and brokenness and mm-hmm. very, very fragile, like Porcelain is. Mm-hmm. It was inspired by a woman that Antiquitas met when he was in rehab who was struggling to take care of her child and struggling with her addiction at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't feature any slap bass, which, you know, I don't think it would have worked.
That would not have worked, no.
And it is kind of the come down of the album so far. Because everything so far, right, you've got high energy.
Mm-hmm. So basically, this is a song that they should have played at Woodstock 99 to
with
calm everybody down. Yes.
Yeah.
With yes.
Yeah. If you don't know what we're talking about, go listen to
the Woodstock
99 clip on our Big Gigs and Festivals episode.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see Woodstock 99 was just a shower, man.
Mm-hmm.
Just a shower.
Mm-hmm.
But no, Porcelain is it's a real, real good song. It's almost like it was composed out of one of those jewelry boxes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, the wind-up jewelry boxes.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's just got that kind of gentle.
Yeah. It's
vibe
sort of in
to
the
it.
Same for somebody who hasn't heard this album, and if you're younger, it's sort of in the same. Not really. It's the same vibe musically as like Every Time by Britney Spears.
Okay.
Which is that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very gentle. It's very. There's a lot
delicate.
Of, yes, it's very delicate. Yes,
and for the type of band that we're talking about,
it's
this
very
is
weird.
Very yeah.
Well, not it, weird. It's just out of.
It's just out of the ordinary yeah. for it. You know, it's I don't know. It's like Megadeth bringing out an acoustic guitar. You know, it's
well there
it's,
you go.
You know, maybe not that extreme, but oh well.
But then we go into Emmett Remus.
Emmett Remus,
which. You know, summertime backwards. Emmett Remus explores the complications and tribulations of a romantic relationship. The title is Summertime, spelled backwards, representing the opposite of a carefree summer love. It was not released as a single, but it has found a place in the set list of many of the band's concerts. For those of you who like to keep, you know, random pop culture facts in your back pocket, like me, it is supposedly said to be inspired by Kiedis' relationship with British singer Melanie C, who is the Sporty Spice, not scary, sporty, from the Spice Girls.
The Scary had her own
yeah, she was,
catalog of...
Yeah, is she with... Yeah.
Donkey.
Yeah. Stop. Eddie Murphy. But Emmett Remus is known for its unique and quirky rhythms.
And
it's a good jam.
It's a good jam. This one is not jumping out to me like a lot of the other ones are.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's been a couple of days since I listened to the album. And that's how bad my ADD is, folks. A couple of days can wipe out.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking the other day, or actually not the other day, earlier with the kids about how my brain is full. Like, I have no more fact space.
No.
I can tell you the phone number and the address from where I lived when I was 7, but I cannot sit here and tell you basic what? Yeah.
It's like Homer Simpson when he mm-hmm. when he can't learn anything new, he pushes something old out of his brain.
Mm-hmm.
Like that time he took that whole making wine course and forgot how to drive.
Right. Yes. That is
that's,
me.
That's because you were drunk. Oh, I was.
Mm-hmm.
But this one jumps out at me a little bit because I can hear him yelling into the microphone.
Which one is that?
I Like Dirt.
Ah.
It's a whimsical song about enjoying the simple things in life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely a tribute to the funk rock roots. And
yeah.
It's definitely a lighter, you know, song than the rest of it. It's one of the shortest tracks on the album, just coming in at 2 minutes. And that's the thing about this album we haven't touched on yet.
Mm-hmm.
So far, up to this point, okay, one of the, when we did the REM album that we spoke about earlier on in the season,
right?
One of the things was you felt all 4 minutes of some of these songs,
right?
So far, you don't feel that with you because they are high paced, up tempo,
right?
With the exception of Porcelain,
right?
And but even then, you don't feel the full 3 minutes of that song either.
Okay,
if that makes sense.
That does make sense.
Okay.
Well, then you go from I Like Dirt to This Velvet Glove.
This one, I don't know. This one is completely escaping my brain. You could play it to me and I'd go, oh, right. Okay.
Right.
So I'm out of this one.
This Velvet Glove is a complex song that kind of touches on the themes of spirituality, vulnerability, and self-discovery. The acoustic guitar work by Frusciante, it's supposed to add an emotional layer to the song. Like he played it from his heart. It's usually praised by fans for its emotional depth, but it was not released as a single. This is another one that they could have done at 99. It's known for its harmonic complexity, which is, you know, not something harmonic when you think of Red Hot Chili Peppers. No. You know, yeah. But it employs multiple chord changes. So again, Frusciante is in his element. Anthony Kiedis has described this song as one of his personal favorites on the album.
Which is sad for me, not knowing what it is.
Right?
No, it's that really does bother me, my ADD, sometimes.
I know.
When I host a semi-review show and I can't review something of it because my brain completely under
it's okay.
And the same thing goes for Savior. This one doesn't jump out at me right now, but I know a little bit more about it than This Velvet Glove. It deals with a relationship between a father and son and understanding and reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikitas wrote the lyrics about his father, known as Blackie Demet. Demet. It's spelled Demet to
no,
me.
No, it's not. It's spelled Demet, but that's okay.
Okay. It's been praised for its lyrical content as one of the lesser-known songs on the album, so it's kind of a hidden gem.
Yes, and it's father and son without going full Cats in the Cradle. So
you never go full Cats in the Cradle. Never go full
never
Cats.
Never go full Cats in the Cradle.
No, I mean.
But they did use the guitar solo. They didn't go full Cats in the Cradle, but they did go a little Frampton because they used a talk box in the guitar solo. But
didn't the Foo Fighters use talk boxes too? I mean, wasn't the talk box making a slight comeback at that point?
I don't remember. I think so. I know somebody else was too, but that was total Frampton.
Oh, wait a minute. No, it was.
It was around the world.
Daft Punk.
Daft Punk, yeah.
But no, it was Bon Jovi that was bringing it back.
With
Bon Jovi, It's My Life.
Yeah.
Because they had a talk box.
Well, no, that's not. Yeah, anyway.
That's Living on a Prayer.
I know, same thing.
Yeah.
It's my life.
Okay. and that's why I don't sing.
Mm-mm.
But no, it's a slower song than the rest of the album. Not as slow as, say, Porcelain and not as gentle as it, but this is kind of... This is a good song from what I remember of it. And
the next song is not a song that you like. We're going to go very quickly over this one because it's icky.
Yeah, and for those listening, and I have a thing about bodily fluid.
Not a fan.
I don't even like tears. But you get to the nasty stuff.
Okay, so the next one's Purple Stain. Yes. It's a funky track that blends elements of rock, hip hop, and funk. It has rapid fire lyrics from Anthony Kiedis and a funky bass line from Flea. So
Kiedis
again,
almost sounds bored singing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
While not a single, it's a fan favorite for its energetic vibe. The lyrics mention Californication, serving as a nod to the album's overarching theme, and it's known for its playful and very suggestive lyrics, and we're just going to leave that there.
And for fans of that song, I'm sorry, but you can't make me talk about it, and I'm not going to talk about it.
He gets a little squicky.
I get a little squicky. So we're almost done. We've only got two tracks left. This one's called Right on Time. Mm-hmm. It's energetic track about seizing the moment, and it is a very, very fast, frantic, you know, just it's in your face. It's like,
well,
Poochie.
Yeah, but it's so fast you don't even realize that it's very short too. I mean, no. It's a minute and 52 seconds. But it's a live staple and often included in their encores, which, I mean, of course, if I can come back on stage and play something for a minute and 52 seconds, right. Deuces.
Well, not just that. I mean, it even has time to do tempo changes in there.
I know, that is crazy. I mean, it's short and it's very upbeat, but it also is a testament to their skills. I mean, it's very, skills as songwriters and as players, and for Shanti and Fleet, again, kill it, along with Chad. We keep talking about everybody, Chad, man. Chad is...
I think because his work with the Chili Peppers is, I don't want to say basic, because that's not basic, but it's more simple.
No, it's not even so much that. It's the fact that he's not as loud of a personality as the others. Chad is I'm going to show up and get my work done, dude.
Yeah.
And you never really hear about him other than the fact that he looks like Will Ferrell. You never really, like, he wasn't in the press pages. Like, he didn't do anything. You know, he did his thing.
And that's the thing. He is very, very talented, and he does do multi-genre stuff.
He's amazing.
I mean, him and Flea worked on Alanis Morissette's album.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did. I know they did You Ought to Know, but I'm not sure if they worked on other tracks on the album, too.
No, Taylor Hawkins was her drummer then.
It was Flea and Chad Smith for
No, I know Flea was there, but I'm pretty sure that Taylor Hawkins was her drummer.
Not for that track.
Hmm.
And I know they did the comeback for the Chicks. They were the drummer and bass player for them too. Mm-hmm. When they did I'm Not Ready to Make Nice,
mm-hmm. which is also done by Ruben.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Hang on 1 second. Let's clear something up real quick.
Because I'm giving him the squinty eye.
Maybe the squinty eye, but I promise you, I read that somewhere.
Well. Hmm. While he is looking at that, let me start talking about the next track. The next track is Road Tripping.
Okay, hang on. We're both wrong.
Oh.
It does have a Chili Peppers theme to it. I was wrong about the member of the Chili Peppers that played on the album. It was Dave Navarro, who played guitar, and Flea, who played bass.
Mm-hmm.
The drummer...
Mm-hmm.
was Matt Laug, who was a session drummer, but whose repertoire includes, drumroll please,
brrr, ding.
AC/DC, Alice Cooper, and Slash's Snakepit, as well as Alanis Morissette.
Well, there you go.
So,
anyway. All right. So, last track of the album is Road Tripping, which is an acoustic song that captures the essence of friendship and the open road. That just makes me think of SpongeBob. We're on the road, 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 road.
Till we have kids.
Right? It was actually written about a road trip that Kiedis, Flea, and Frusciante took to Big Sur. It was released as a single and received moderate airplay. It's the only completely acoustic song on the album. And the music video was shot in black and white and features the band members playing on the beach.
The lyrics are a little simplistic, but the overall vibe of the song is real, real good.
Yes.
I mean, look, I'm road tripping with my favorite allies. We've got snacks and supplies. I mean, that's a little...
But I'm down with
that. It's a little Dr. Seuss.
I know, but okay. We're Oasis fans.
I know.
We do not have any right to call anybody else's lyrics... Seuss-esque.
No, okay. I'm not saying that as a criticism.
I almost said Seuss-ish.
Seuss-ish. I'm not saying that as a criticism.
No,
I'm just saying it's a little too simplistic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm the first person to jump on Noel Gallagher's simplistic lyrics.
Yeah, but I think it's a really cool track.
And not only is it a real, real cool track, it is a real, real mellow way to end the album on.
Yes. So we started off real high, and we've done the party, and now... It's time to go home.
It's time to go home. It's time to rest.
Stop. Hang out with your homies. Roll out. Go on your road trip.
Yep.
Toodles. Till we meet again.
That's one thing I hate about people who live in California. They can go on a road trip and they can go see these big... We go on a road trip. What are we going to see? Bucky's?
Right. I actually was in California in 99 and I was talking to a gentleman. I ran into this guy where I was... Well, anyway. I was talking to this young guy who was telling me that he loves living in California because it's the only state where if you time everything right, you can go like... snow skiing and surfing on the same day.
Yeah.
So, which is really cool.
It is really cool. Yeah. And California does sound like a good place to go.
It's very pretty.
Very pretty. Very expensive, though.
Yes, it was expensive in 99. I can't even imagine. No.
No. Mm-mm. So, what would you give this album out of 10 in the old numerical rating?
Probably about a solid 8.
Solid 8?
Yeah, it's a good album.
That's about what I give it. What are your thoughts?
I think that it's very good for if you need something that's going to keep you up moving around. This album is very it's a good workout album, honestly. You've got your ups and your downs and you cool down at the end. Like it's if you need something to keep you up pumped and moving, this is good for you. You can tell I'm now in my 40s. Cuz I'm like, we can go walk. We can, yeah.
It's a good album to house clean with, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Now, I agree with you. It's a solid 8. It's a great comeback album for John Frusciante. It's slightly top heavy.
Yes.
The best stuff's at the beginning.
Yes.
You know, with all due respect to Road Trippin', which is an outlier, the from tracks 10 to 15, sorry, tracks 9 to 14, just not, you know... So, you know, it's a real, real good album.
They could have left off Purple Stain.
Could have left off Purple Stain.
Yeah.
Some amazing, amazing guitar work. Mm-hmm. Some amazing, amazing bass work and intertwined together.
Yes.
Very, very symbiotic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very, very just wonderful, wonderful playing.
Right.
You know?
The cool thing, you know, it does have a really good legacy about it. It showed the world that the band still had it after, you know, what was One Hot Minute. I didn't mind One Hot Minute, but, you know, I mean, I could understand how it doesn't, you know, the one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah, but the band were in perma-turmoil between 1992 and 1998.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this showed that they could come out of the other end of that.
Right, right. It did bring them new fame and fans, and it was an international hit.
And I think all the good stuff we talk about is because of John Frusciante. This is his album.
Yes. They would follow this up with By the Way, which was also a success.
Yep. The band would take a break for an indefinite period of time because...
In 2008.
Because they didn't stop performing from the start of this album until the end of 2008. They just were always on the road and always recording. They needed a break.
Right, right.
However, John Frusciante would leave the band again in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
This time, he'd spiraled again, not into hard drugs, but into electronica music. Which is a drug in itself.
Yes, I mean, it's designed to keep your heart rate up, so there you go.
Yeah.
But Frusciante would return in 2019 and play on the band's 12th album, Unlimited Love. But as far as Californication goes, it is considered one of the best albums of all time, with listings in the top 500 albums of all time and the book 1001 Albums You Need to Hear Before You Die.
Yeah, so it's a real, real fantastic album.
Yes.
Go listen to it. Go listen to the tracks that I couldn't give you a review on because that way you can form your own opinion.
Yes.
ADD, man. Yes. I can remember
it
what
is it, a thing.
It is a thing. It is pretty bad. That's why I did an episode of Right Here Right Now podcast fighting with myself, about my ADD. So Sarah, thank you very much for having. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate you.
You're welcome. It's been a fabulous way to spend my lunch break today.
Yes, it is a fabulous way to spend my lunch break too. I gotta go back playing Fallout here in a minute. Oh, the tragedy! Oh, the pain of it all.
Woe is you.
Yeah, I know, butthead. Right. But Sarah will be on in a couple of weeks where we talk about a movie that can give you the squiggles, squiggies, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll have more of that in a couple of weeks because I've got a few episodes in between then. But with that being said, Sarah, thank you for coming on.
Most welcome, dear.
We'll be back here in a couple of minutes where I talk about what's going on next week on the We Cosmo Network and who we've got coming on the podcast next week. So,
toodles.
We'll get sued for saying that.
Adios, muchachos.
With that note, I'll be right back. Take it easy, everybody. Thank you to Sarah for showing up once again on the 90s podcast. I really do appreciate the time she takes to spend out of her day to come over here. She's very, very busy with her job and with her own personal projects. Some stuff we will be able to promote soon, I hope. But we recorded one on my lunch break today, and we're recording one this later on this evening, and that'll be next week's episode, where Sarah joins us for one of the best book-to-movie adaptations of all time. We talk about the 1996 British classic Trainspotting. If you have young children, I suggest you don't let them listen to next week's episode. It will be an explicit episode, so just fair warning you on that. But Sarah will be back, and we begin her opinion on this classic Scottish-British masterpiece, as it is. Next week on our YouTube channel, we've got one more confirmed episode of the 90s Game of the Dog at My Homework series, episode 13. I hope you will join us for that. That will drop at 1 o'clock Central Standard Time. And by the time it finishes, we'll be up for another episode of the podcast, which will be Trainspotting. So very, very good. Very nice. also, we have news of the return of our Dad Streamer series, because the 90s Gamer is almost at an end. We will be coming back to do some more stream work. And I have two games in mind. One of them will be going through a series like we did with our Paper Mario series. And the other one will be a finishing up job of a game we started but never finished. So, that's going to be a whole lot of fun. And we will announce all of that in 2 weeks' time. So, I'll have a clearer head as to what I'm doing with the Dog at My Homework series. I'll be able to announce what will be coming up next before it actually comes out. So, but you guys will have a lot of fun with it. I'm sure you will. I know I will have a lot of fun with it. And yeah. So with that in mind, that's all I really have to talk about this week. I don't have much to go on. Except thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. For those of you who don't know, we are on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser, Pandora, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Podbean, or Amazon Music. If you listen to us on YouTube, we're week behind, so this drops on a Sunday, and then the following Saturday we drop it on YouTube. We also do special clips of the podcast on YouTube as well. Why am I saying that? Just to let you know that we have a YouTube channel. That's where I do all my streaming, that's where I do all my video game stuff, and that's where a lot of the 90s podcast drops as well. So that also ties into our archive, which is at becosmonetwork.com, which has been getting an upgrade over the last couple of months. Some pages are still not working, and I don't know why. I've got to figure them out. The joys of being a one-man studio. So, with that in mind, I've got nothing else to say. I'm just blabbering on up at this point, but everybody take it easy, okay? Look after one another. Care about your relatives. Care about your elders. Care about your youngers. I don't know what I'm talking about. Say your prayers. Eat your vitamins, brother. Try and get that awful man out of your head. And, just be good. That's all the advice I can give you. Be good. Be awesome. Be yourself. You can be no one else. Okay? And with my rabbiting on, I'm just going to jump off here. So I want you to take it easy, everybody. Bye.